Yo, 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 welcome to Crate 808, and today we bring you a very special guest, a woman who's the most undefeated rhyme orator on your playlist, who's known to bomb your train of thought like Style Wars, real rap runs through her veins, she's ether in female form, a lady who's undersold and over hip-hop to boot, and is approximately one-fourth human, the rest unidentified, she's slaughtering crews, squads, goons, teams. Yes, it's the queen who's coming to rule your region. The woman who's royal with rebel in the blood. We have got Sarok in the house. How are you doing, man?
Ooh, love that introduction. I'm good.
I had to. When you've been spitting so much fire like yourself, man, I got to go in. So, but it's nice to have you on, man. Congratulations on the Sharecropper's Daughter. Amazing album. Brilliant album. But today you're going to bring one of your favorite records to the table to talk about with us from the 90s, as we're a 90s hip hop podcast. We're going to be talking about Outkast's 80 Aliens today, right?
That album, man, it's just, it had some like, you know, hits like Elevators and Jazzy Bell and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I just feel like it's still largely unrecognized as one of their doper albums. And for me, I feel like that was where we started seeing Andre shift, you know, his aesthetic, you know, his rhymes were starting to go into a more space age, otherworldly kind of bent.
Yeah.
And that was just so dope. And the music kind of reflected that kind of like spacey, kind of a little digital sound with that, you know, still the musicianship of Atlanta. I just remember discovering that later than it came out, maybe like a year after it came out, and being obsessed with it. It was such good vibe music, but also like it was very thoughtful, you know, the songs on there with the poetry. And
yeah.
It's just dope.
I love that. Because I want to dive into the album, but I love it when someone just can't stop, like, you know, just how much they love the album. So it gives me a great context to like where you're coming from with this record. But before we jump in, you're the first time we've had you on the pod, and I ask the guest always the same question every time, man. So before we dive into 80 Aliens, Sarok, man, last 24 hours, what's the least hip hop thing you've done in the last 24 hours? Can you?
The least. Hip-hop is like, it permeates everything. So like, what's not hip-hop, you know?
That is a very good answer.
Yeah, I mean, you see I got my bamboo earrings on now, and boom. You know, the culture just like pervades every aspect of my life, so I can't really say. I mean, maybe I binge watched A Different World, but like, hip-hop is all throughout that show. So there you go.
To be fair, you've answered it. You've nailed it. That's it. That's all good. Brilliant, man. So, Sarok, man, when we asked, first of all, for you to come on the pod, I was like, I'd love to hear her taste in music. You came back with 80 Aliens, 1996, Outkast's second album. So tell me, man, why was that the one? Why was that the one that, like, kind of where you thought, yeah, that's the one I want to bring? Because to me, it feels like it's almost perfect for someone who's an artist like yourself. But I'd love to hear from you why you wanted to bring this on.
I feel like for me, that was before before their widespread acceptance into the mainstream, before Quim and I. And I think you can hear the grit, the grime, you can feel that, you can hear the transition as Dre is discovering himself, as they become stronger, both of them become stronger as MCs. And I think that what Southern Playalistic lacked in terms of like social commentary and stuff, which they had some of that, they had of course that on there. I don't think you can be Outkast and not do that. Like, that's in their blood. But like, ATLians kind of like dug deeper into that. And, you know, to be honest, at that time I was, you know, a teenager, and I was, you know, blazing at the time. And I remember like, I would listen to it when I would smoke, and then like discover all these different sounds. And that's a testament to, you know, Dungeon, and like all of their, like their production was so intricate. So outside of the lyrical content, the flows and everything, like the production levels were amazing. They were working with like the hooks, the singing, and all of that was just so good. It was just so good.
Yeah,
And you know, I tend to like go against the grain with like, I love, you know, the singles that dropped, and I love mainstream, some of the mainstream singles that they have, but like those songs tend to get skipped. And I like those
The deep cuts. I love that. Because you've nailed one of the things I had, because I've done quite a bit of Outkast on this podcast, and the Outkast have got such a huge following. So it feels like you know these albums, and then you go back and you discover new things all the time. And I was writing, just kind of finalizing my notes today, and I realized I've written like amazing hook, amazing hook, amazing hook, like about six times. And I thought, do you know what? One of the best things about this album are the hooks. Like they're very infectious. I feel like they're a bit of earworms, if you know what I mean.
That's the perfect word.
Yeah.
That's the perfect word.
So when you first discovered it, what was that like? Like who gave you the album? Did you go out and buy it? How did you hear about Outkast? Like how did you even get into them to begin with?
Well, I first heard of Outkast with the first single they dropped off of a Southern Playlist. The Players Game from Far Away. And I was just stuck. Like, who are, what is this? Like that was my introduction to Southern hip hop. And like the swag, the style, like everything, it was so new to me, but it was so fresh. Like that whole world, like they reminded me of like older dudes, like OGs, like the way they, you know, the way they wore their clothes and, you know, the gold and, you know, they're playing, you know, it's just all of that was so fresh. And I was hooked from that point on. And Crumbling Earth was one of my favorite joints from off that album. And they were now on my radar. But after that, I kind of was exploring other types of music and stuff. And that's why I got the album late. I started listening to it maybe a year after it came out. It was a boyfriend at the time who, you know, we would listen to it and, you know, Blaze or whatever and listen. I just recall listening to songs I had heard when I was not high.
Yeah.
And hearing like these instruments and like you said, these earworms. And like, to me, that's everything. Mm-mm-mm. When the music has layers. And then not to mention, like, I'm a huge alien. I call myself a starseed. Like I'm into sci-fi and all of that. To hear Dre, like the title, you know, and the concept, ATLians, you know, feeling like, you know, they had already established with Outkast that they were not, you know, they didn't follow the norm. They felt that they didn't fit with what, you know, the idea of what a rapper was supposed to be didn't fit into like this mainstream culture of hip hop because they were bringing something different to the table. And then with ATLians, they took it a step further with the content, the style, the flow, you know, all of that. And it just totally resonated with me.
When you were there talking about how they look like they're older and like they're more experienced, and you think about the confidence of these guys. And this is what I always enjoy about like going into your music as well. Like there's a confidence where you think, do you know what? I actually am just going to try this, especially on Shake Copper's Daughter. There are quite a few moments where you've been just a bit more like, I'm just going to be me. And I feel like Outkast embrace that tag. I mean, they're called Outkast. They embrace it, but just kind of show the way almost. Like I don't know if anyone was showing the way where you can transform. Like their first album was amazing. Funky Ride itself is just what is that doing on a hip hop album? I love that track. And when you then see them transform into this album, it's like, I mean, the confidence to do that is pretty huge when no one else is, like, you know, so which I feel like is a trailblazing way to kind of move into this era, which we're in now, where people have that freedom just to do it. And I feel like if Outkast had that freedom, I mean, they were on the Face, I mean, it was a big label, but they did have freedom, which was pretty amazing. It reminds me as well, because I remember you said on, is it Deliverance, where you say people weren't feeling that space shit? So I told them I'm on another level. I love that. And I just thought that is Outkast. That's the Outkast thing. So
I mean, they just formed a large part of my, like, they were part of the impetus of me like falling deeper in love with hip hop. It's funny, like when I listen to them talk about Hedlund and D'Lo when I moved down to Atlanta, for the, you know, a lot of the stuff I didn't understand what they were saying at the time because of their accent. Like some of the stuff I didn't understand because of their accents, and, you know, I didn't have the context to understand like certain references they were making. And to drive through Atlanta and like see the intersection of Hedlund and D'Lo and be like, oh, that's what they were talking about. I know what this area is now.
That's amazing.
And like, I, you know, our stomping grounds now is like right up the street from their old high school. So it's just, this dope, like, full circle moment to be, to now be in that cocoon of which they came out of, and they created such incredible, incredible music.
Yeah, because originally you're from DC, right? And then you moved. Oh, okay, cool. Because just people who didn't know. So the scenes must have been quite different there as well. Were you rapping in DC as well? Were you actually like writing? No, nothing.
I didn't start until I got to Atlanta.
Okay, cool. So you've been in that. Yeah. I see. Okay, because it just feels like, I've never been, but all the people I know who have been just feel, say, it's just, it's quite a magical place when it comes to music. Like, there is a lot of just creativity everywhere. And it just sounds amazing.
Where, Atlanta or DC?
Atlanta, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, is that not like DC? You're like, maybe not.
No, DC is really creative. I mean, we have, you know, our own local, our regional music, Go-Go, which is an amalgam of funk and African music and hip hop and all of that. So it's absolutely creative. You know, some of the dopest and legendary musicians came out of there. Marvin Gaye, Duke Ellington, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, what's up? This is Black Thought, and you are now rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo. This is Stretch Armstrong.
Ooh-wee. My name is Bobby DeGarcia, a.k.a. Cool Bob Love.
You're now listening to Crate 808.
Hey, yo, what up, y'all? This is Prince Paul, and you're rocking with Crate 808 Podcast.
Yo, it's Easy Evidence, Dilated Peoples. You're rocking with the Crate 808 Podcast, my favorite shit. Let's go.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Master Ace from Brooklyn, New York, and you're checking out the Crate 808 Podcast, real hip hop.
On AT Aliens, then, we have a few categories that we like to go into. I just want to jump in with one of the ones that you talked about, a few of the tracks, but are there any tracks where you find they're just the most rewindable tracks? Like, that's the one I'm just going to always go back to. Do you have any of those?
Everything. But, you know, I feel like maybe Wheels of Steel is one of those where, I don't know, it's just such a groove. That one, and then 13th Floor, to me, it's just so, like, it's very meditative, and I don't know, it just puts you in a space of, like, just reflection and peace and, you know, thoughtfulness. So 13th Floor, I don't know, there's so many. So many.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's all good, because it is quite a complete album. When you talk about 13th Floor, I was thinking about that when I was listening to it the other day. It's Big Rube, like, who starts it off with the poetry. And again, who's using spoken word and kind of gospel and, you know, and funk. There's funk in here as well. There's so much different stuff. And to just kind of take it all out. I was listening to 13th Floor and I was just thinking to myself, like, it makes me feel really nostalgic, but could you really ever be nostalgic for someone else's memories? It's really weird. Like, you know, it's obviously their story, but
you can, though,
right?
Like,
right.
It's funny because, you know, I have been blessed to, like, throughout the course of my career, to be surrounded by people who came up, like, were doing it in the golden era, you know what I'm saying, who started breaking and DJing and all that stuff when it was becoming a thing.
Yeah.
And to hear them talk about it, I am like, I listen with a yearning to be there and a wish that I was old enough to have experienced that, to hear, you know, people talk about, like, I know people who grew up in the Bronx around Sedgwick and Cedar and remembers hearing the parties that Cool Herc used to have. And I'm like, damn, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall, you know, and imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, because can you imagine the energy of that? Like,
I can't imagine when you're in the dungeon and you're making music. I mean, I'm not a musician. And for someone like yourself who has, you've got a lot of musicality to your music, I would say. Just, I think I would just be in awe of seeing someone sit there in a clay dungeon and just think, actually, let's try this and this and this. And then you somehow make, like, Millennium. And you're like, how have you done that? One of my most probably the most rewindable bit for this album for me is Andre on Millennium, just humming. All he's doing is, that's amazing. That's so simple.
Where's the creativity? Like, how did that? And I think that comes from, you know, everybody was there. Goody was there. Joy was there. Like, all those people were there just trying stuff, creating stuff. You know, on one of the tracks, I forget which one it was. I mean, he's freestyling. Like, he just went in there and freestyled a track. So it's just amazing. Like, I think being around all that creative energy and having that, I think also too, like, because Atlanta in the South wasn't respected at that time as being a valid form of hip hop. I think they had something to prove too. Yeah. So like all these dope people from the South with band backgrounds, you know, which is huge in Atlanta and Southern Black culture, and, you know, singers and stuff. I think Joy is from Tennessee. Like all these people that are just collaborating and coming up with stuff on the spot. They were sleeping on the floor in between writing and stuff. It was just a vibe. Yeah. It was just a vibe. It's cool when I see people, when I see Dreamville, like they did their album where they called like all those artists and they came in and we just like, we're creating together. Like that's something that we need to do more often, that I'd like to do more often.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Have you ever been in that zone where you've just been like, everything I'm doing right now is amazing? Like, you know, you need that confidence anyway, but you're almost like to yourself, like, oh my God, what I've just written is amazing. Have you ever, when's like the last few times you've been there in that zone?
I feel like recently I'm writing some new stuff for a project. And when I get going, like when I get into it and, you know, you start feeling yourself after a while, like, damn, that was a bar. And that encourages you to be like, okay, how can I make this next line even doper?
Yeah.
But I think sometimes when I haven't written for a while and then I get back into it, you know, when I start feeling myself and I start writing and I look back at what I've written, I'm like, oh, okay, I still got it.
Yeah. You still got it. But not only have you still got it, I feel there's been, because I dived a lot deep into your earlier stuff, which I kind of missed at the time. More recently, there's a growth there, man. Like, well, let's talk about Sharecropper's Daughter. I mean, this is a thing where, first of all, congratulations on the album. I know it's got a lot of critical plaudits. I know a lot of my friends who are feeling it, a lot of just socials, everyone is feeling it. So congrats. Big up.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, when I was listening to 80 Aliens and then I was listening to this, I came to, well, mainstream kept going around and around in my head because it made me think of you releasing this new album. Your other stuff is, you know, still great. There's so many bars. There's lots of great messaging, great music. But then when you come to this one, I'm like, wow, she's really just found this new zone where I feel like when you listen to someone like mainstream, on that, they talk about like, you know, selling out and, you know, having a message and stuff like that. And I just thought to be able to do what you've done, which is like carve out a new space for yourself, which is what Outkast did for themselves as well. How hard is that for you to do? Like to look at the landscape and think to yourself, well, you know, I could go one or two ways. I could conform a little bit to musically, image-wise, whichever way you want to take that, or I can do my own thing and do me as an artist. How hard has that been? Has there been moments where you've been tempted to, or people have given you offers to be a bit more conformative?
I mean, throughout the years, there have been a few people who have offered what they thought was wisdom, you know, it might be better if you do this or that. And some people who actually shared with me that something that was very crucial in me forming and me writing The Sharecropper's Daughter, about like just me writing something that just showed my listenership and my supporters and those who have yet to be that, who I was, you know, so they can identify and connect more with the music. But honestly, it's never been a thing where I've looked outside of myself and said, I'm going to do what they do, or I'm going to do the opposite of what they do. I'm compelled to write music based on my own personal space, my own personal like moments of reflection and what I want to build on and stuff. I'm not looking for the next trend or looking for what will make me more palatable to the industry or mainstream. I'm just writing, you know, what Sol Rock writes. You know what I mean? I'm just talking about the things I want to talk about. And if they love it, that's great. If they don't, they'll move on to the next song and they'll catch me on the next album.
yeah. But again, the DNA of Outkast is right there. What you've just said, it feels like they did that. And this album pretty much, there's roots and branches it goes off on. And I feel you're definitely on that, man. You're on that lineage. I feel, first of all, Gold Leaf, absolute banger. Thank you. That's been on. We have a bangers playlist and that's been like right near the top. That's unreal. Love that track. But like, no, but then also I would say, I know you're on Rhymesayers, Evidence is on here, produced Deliverance, which I love as well. And Deliverance, I just wanted to talk a bit about that as well. And working with someone like Evidence, first of all, I wanted to ask about the hook on that, because you say I'm turning over a new leaf, same life with a new lease. I just wanted to kind of know, like, break that down for me. Like, where were you before? What kind of changed for you? And where are you now, kind of thing?
Honestly, that hook was just talking about being more, stepping into a certainty and confidence about what it is that I do. Of along those same lines of not being fearful of critics or, you know, how people receive it, but just writing what I write and knowing that the things that I'm pulling from, the sources that I'm pulling from, can, you know, that people can connect with it on some way or the other.
Yeah.
And just releasing my art, because I mean, the thing is, what we put out here in the world, what we put forth in the world, whether it's art or, you know, any other kind of like form or energy or whatever, it's a gift both to ourselves and to the people who receive it.
Yeah.
And we owe that to ourselves to share that. We owe that to ourselves to dig deep and explore those parts of ourselves, of our expression. Yeah. So that turning over that new leaf is just like leaving all the self doubts about, you know, where I fit or, you know, what I write or whatever behind, with the same me being the same me, but just a new lease and new outlook on life. Mm. Going to booth, game time, different frame of mind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
And man, that's so, yeah. And I think that confidence kind of carries through to the listener, you know, so, because I don't know much about you, you know, when I hear this album, I kind of feel like I'm getting to know you, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of complicated stuff in there. There's a lot of darkness in there, but it's beautiful. If you know, it's a weird way to put it, but you know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's been a plight there, but obviously it comes out in this really beautiful music. And I mean, for instance, well, we were saying there with Evidence on Deliverance, people, how do you find it working with someone like with EV and stuff like that when you're working on an album like this?
It was dope. I mean, we did it remotely. Well, I had gone to his studio in Cali and he was playing like some beats and stuff for me. And I can't remember if that one was originally on the list, but I remember he sent some more after we went back home and was just like, you know, just vibe out and see what you see. Mm. And I chose that one just because it was just a little bit more simple, but it was that grimy, gritty vibe that I wanted to add into the fold of the music that we were doing for the album. And I knew I could play around with it, like with my flow and stuff, because it was a little bit more pared down. But just it had that energy. It was dope because, you know, after that, you know, we went back and forth and he added some stuff to it. And then he also did some stuff with Albie Smooth, who contributed to the track as well. But the dopest part was shooting the video, because he directed it alongside Steve Benasco. And he shot the video. And I think that they did a great job at capturing like the essence of the song and the energy of the song in that video. Like working with him was dope. His kid was there. It was just like, it was dope to kind of collaborate in that way.
That's wicked, man. Because Evie likes that, man. We've had him on the pod and he talks about like photography and the image and, you know, he really has a visual like eye, and if that makes any sense. I love him for that. And he's just generally a great, cool guy. And I feel like when I see him on production with someone like yourself, it brings that, man. 40 and a Mule is another one where I was like, okay, Sarok is ticking the boxes right now, because I'm all here for like cerebral rap. But when you can mix it with that, like you said, that harder edge for someone like me who grew up on that, especially in hardcore hip hop. And I feel like there's a lot of that in your rapping, man. Like I feel there's that essence of an MC is still there. And it really helped. It adds that little texture, you know, it adds a bit of wrinkle to the whole listen.
Hey guys, this is Jerobi from A Tribe Called Quest. You're listening to the Crate 808 podcast.
Yo, what's up, man? It's your man El Zai, and you're rocking with the Crate 808 podcast. You know what I'm saying? Where you can check out, you know, artists like me.
Hey, it's Steve Rifkin from Loud Records. You're rocking with the Crate 808 podcast. Spread the word. These guys are dope. The questions they ask and the interview is amazing. Enjoy yourself. Be safe and be healthy.
1212, you know what it is. It's your man SKYZOO Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And this is the Crate 808 podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, share that love and put your peoples on.
Peace and light. This is Cyrock rocking with Crate 808 podcast. And you want to check out everything hip hop on crate808.com.
Yo, this is Juggernaut, Nottingham City, NG area. You're rocking with the Crate 808 podcast. Make sure you keep it locked in. There's so many gems drop. Crate808.com.
Hey, yo, this is the one and only R.A., the Rugged Man. And I'm rocking with the Crate 808 podcast with my man Cam. Yeah.
I was going to ask about also Sharecropper's daughter being a really like kind of standout name. Just on the title, if you could break that down, what was your journey towards calling this the Sharecropper's Daughter, and what was your other ideas before you landed on this one?
Well, in painting the picture of who I was, you know, outside of my artistry, but who I was as a person, the thing that most shaped me were the stories of my family and my ancestors and the things that my father would share with me about, you know, how hard it was growing up in a family of sharecroppers and how challenging it was to grow up during the Jim Crow era and have to experience racism and stuff. And thinking about my journey and, you know, as a young person, you feel like your parents, oh, they don't understand what my experience, what I'm going through or whatever. But in reflecting further, I saw these parallels between his journey and mine, you know, in a different era, of course, but still some of the same things that we were experiencing as Black people in America. And I wanted to explore like the legacy of like generational trauma and the legacy of like holding on to things that can manifest throughout the course of our lives in very harmful ways. Mm. And in exploring those things, also discovering the beauty and the joy from, you know, the richness of what generations past have poured into you. And discovering yourself through that process. And so in doing that and releasing some of that stuff, and I found that I was digging into themes that were really salient for what was happening today, you know, and grounded, talking about like just being so caught up in this whole world of like social media and stuff, you start to lose yourself.
Yeah.
You start to become dependent on other people's validation of you and opinions of you and centering yourself back into that foundation. So like that whole theme is what the album is about, like centering and grounding yourself. And that's part of why, you know, I had to make sure that I had that boom bap, that like hard edge stuff on the album. Cause that's like, I love that. Like, that's my favorite stuff. Yeah. Like Busta Rhymes is one of my favorite, like MOP is one of my favorites. Like I love stuff that, I love that energy. So even though this album was a little bit more, you know, it was a little bit more solemn, it was more melodies and stuff, I needed to have that, cause that's a part of who I am as an MC, you know, just as much as these like singing hooks and all of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. But that comes across again, like we keep going back to 80 Aliens, which when you hit Over the Woods and stuff like that, you realize these guys have that hard edge, just like you have that hard edge, but you also have this kind of palette, which is just more than just that, you know, and I love that. I think just going to what you were saying there about looking at your family and kind of portraying that in this album, how have they been on your journey as an artist? Because I can't imagine, how has that been for them? Have they supported you fully all the way, or how's it all gone down?
Well, okay. You know what's funny? My father, you know, is an artist himself. He's a visual artist, painter, but he wasn't able to explore that because, you know, he had a family to feed and all of that.
For sure.
And seeing him, seeing the disappointment in him and not being able to explore that side of himself. Because art is just so, it's such a cathartic expression. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that rather late, I feel like, in my life.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I went after it with gusto because of that. I was like, oh, okay, like this is me purging stuff. This is me like talking about the things I wouldn't normally talk about in real life. And I am a very pragmatic Capricorn. So for many years through, you know, as I was like learning and growing as an MC, I was also working. And they were cool with it while I was still working, getting them benefits and, you know, having that stability and all of that.
For sure.
But when I left work and decided to pursue this full time, like that's where the concern came in. That's where, you know, when you going back to school, like, I'm like, I have not been in college for many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not, I think that it comes from, you know, just make a fear, like making sure that their daughter is straight. Like, because he understood how hard it was to support himself just as an artist.
For sure.
He doesn't want me to fall, you know, in those same traps. And then, you know, he's still operating off of like his knowledge of the music industry from the 60s when like they were giving people cars instead of, you know, in lieu of like royalties and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like he also has a paranoia about that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, Dad, like I understand. Like I read contracts, I have a lawyer, like all of these things. Like I'm straight.
If Rhyme Sayers are just giving you a Cadillac and that's it, then yeah, there's something wrong. We know this.
Right,
we know
right.
this. We know this. But yeah, man, that is, yeah, I feel like it's a parental thing, I think, you know, yeah. It comes out of you, I suppose. But when was it then that you thought, because that takes a bit of confidence to one, first of all, I praise anyone who feels that they can put their soul out there, like, you know, to kind of be judged like by an audience, to express yourself. You're leaving yourself very open. So props mm-hmm. on every artist who can do that. But second of all, when did you figure like, you know what, I'm good. I'm actually good. Like was there someone who said, damn, you're really good? Or was it just yourself where you were like, I can kill all these cats? Like, you know, like when was that? And when did you realize that? When was that realization for yourself?
You know, that's crazy. You know what's crazy? Like, it took a long time for me to feel that. Like, even when people were saying it, even when I was being invited to be on stages with some of the dopest MCs, like that cosign should have been enough. But it took me maybe 6 or 7 years in before I finally felt like I have a handle on this thing. You know, there's not many people seeing me. You know what I'm saying? And I still have my, you know, artists are like so sensitive. We're our worst critics. You know, we're constantly wanting to get better. And so like, there's always that criticism, you know, of ourselves, like we could be better and all of that. But feeling that sense of confidence, like I belong here, it really was like 6 or 7 years in. Because the thing is, people can buy your music, come to your shows, applaud and co-sign and all of that. But it doesn't mean anything unless you feel it in here.
Yeah,
you know, if you feel it inside yourself. And I think too, like seeing other people, what really made like cemented that for me was like seeing people getting mainstream popularity that I felt were not deserving of that. Like, I'm like, if y'all can get hype on this man, I know I'm doing, you know what I'm saying? I know I'm doing something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Sometimes it takes that to just look at the landscape and think, actually, and that's in all forms, I suppose. But man, yeah, wicked. I mean, you say there about working with some of the best on stage and getting co-signs and stuff like that. I mean, some of the features on here are just brilliant, obviously. I need to talk to you about my man Black Thought.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What was the line on there you guys said? Two Leviathans fraternizing? Come on. That's mm-hmm. exactly what this is right now. Like, this is bars. And the way you guys go to and fro on the third verse on, yeah, man, just so sick. How are you finding that when you worked with him on Black Renaissance? Like, how are you finding that with Thought? I know you know him generally, but how is it working with someone like that when you're writing together?
It was very intimidating. I shared that honestly and freely. I will not even lie, because, you know, that's like big bro. Like, he's one of the coolest guys in more ways than one. Like, he's cool, like, and he's also very down to earth, you know? So when we're in the studio, I'm nervous. Like, I'm like, okay, I know he believes in me and what I do, and I believe in me and what I do, but that all shifts a little when you're in the studio with one of the goats, you know?
Yeah,
and I think for me, it was even more so a little intimidating, because seeing the ease with which he, you know, would just write and jot down ideas and stuff, as opposed to my like neurotic, like scratching out of bars and rewriting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a learning experience, because I don't get to write in studios with people very often. Like, I'm usually at home, just, you know, in my sweats or pajamas or something, at my leisure and without a time limit. And it like kind of forced me to write faster. It kind of forced me to instantly believe in what I was writing, in the clarity and the skillfulness of what I was writing. And it kind of prepared me for that whole, you know, being in a studio that I'm not familiar with. Like, just these new environments are so important for growth, like creative growth. I think that was the main lesson for me to learn then, you know. And then he would drop like just, you know, little gems here and there and advice and guidance and stuff. So that was really cool too.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's wicked. Was there anything you would like to share, like lessons wise? Did he give you anything where you think, yeah, that's going to hold me in good stead for the rest of my kind of career? Was there anything in there that you'd like to share with us?
One of the things that he told me was like, because I like to just jump right in, attack the beat and growl and all that. And he was just like, you know, you can ease into it. Like, come in easy and then build up to the attack. And, you know, while I still, you know, do my thing too, where I just jump right in, I like to take heed to that advice was, you know, it's something that I utilize to this day. Like, let me do the slow burn first and then like incinerate them.
Yeah, let's just go in. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's really interesting because I remember hearing him. I know you have a lot of peers in the rap game with Rhapsody and Shay Noir and obviously Styles P on the album as well. I mean, like when you were, I think it's on After 12 and you're on Moments in the Sun. That's the one I think it is. The way your outro verse on that track, it makes me feel like, I think there's you and RJ Payne and Shay are on there. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel different, man. That way you attack that verse at the end of that track made me feel like that, what you've said, you haven't gone in, bang, out of hell for leather. It builds, it builds, it builds until the end where you're like, just fury. There's a lot of fury in that, the way you're spitting that. And yeah, so just that just comes to mind when you told me there that Black Thought was telling you, don't jump straight in. I remember hearing you and it sounded different. And I don't know if that's going to be something we're going to hear more of, but man, now I'm here for it.
Yo, what up, y'all? This is DJ Premier and you're checking out the Crates 808 podcast. I put an S on it because there's more than one record in the crate. You know what I'm saying? So that's how we dig. That's how we play. And that's what real DJs do. You heard? That's why it goes down. We out here.
But yeah, I mean, there was something else I wanted to ask you as well, which was, so obviously, you know, Dungeon Family being what like Outkast's like, you know, backdrop and them learning so much working with a team. I mean, you and Soul Messiah have a working relationship where, I mean, when I'm listening to something like Something Real, brilliant use of Alicia Keys' Most Def, by the way. And that one really landed for me because I remember that being a big track for me. And the beat switch in that track is just fire, and you've got a Deepak Chopra reference in there. It's just a wicked track. But like when that beat switch came in, I was like, wow, this is amazing how she works. She's working with this guy and it almost seems seamless. I was wondering if you could give me a bit of an insight on how you guys, first of all, even got familiar enough to make music together, which I feel is something that, you know, it is quite a hard thing to do for a lot of people over a sustained period.
Right. You know, we met in Atlanta and, you know, he has been immersed in hip hop in one form or another since he was like 10 years old. It's funny, we're talking a lot about Outkast. He was in the studio, you know, during a lot of that, you know, doing a lot of that recording and stuff and he with those guys. So I think that a lot of the elements that we hear, like on the stuff that we create, like a lot of the melodies and, you know, harmonies and stuff, like its influence in his, you know, experience playing band and all that stuff, it just plays a huge role in his production. But we met in Atlanta and I wasn't doing music at the time. And he was working with, it was a group called Lab Rats. And they actually, two of the members from the group were from the Backwoods, who was a group with, they did stuff with, put out by Dallas Austin, who Soul Messiah used to work with extensively and do, you know, a lot of stuff with him. Anyway, so he was doing work with them and he had just finished working with a group called Jadis, and I was in love with their album. Like I heard their album and I just was like, oh my God, he did a lot of those earworms. He calls them ear cookies and all of that, just like cool, like layered music. And I just couldn't stop listening to it. And he had these beat tapes and he would just give me like all of his like beat tapes and tracks and stuff. I would just ride to him. And I'm a poet, I'm a writer, and but I've never like rhymed except for like some really bad, like playful freestyling that I used to do back in the day. Like horrible. It doesn't even count. So like in listening to the music and then listening to the work that he was doing with these other artists, I got like a, you know, an urge to do something like, you know, maybe I could do something with this. I mean, because I am a writer. And I remember being in the studio with him and then him playing the music out and stuff. And I was like, I want to record one of my poems to your track. And he told me later that he was skeptical because he's like, it's so not the same thing. Because I didn't do spoken word. I just did written poetry. But he was just like, it's not the same thing. Trying to find that rhythm and ride the beat. Like, that's one of the hardest things to do as an MC. So I got in the booth and I recorded something and he was shocked. he was surprised, like, that I was able to, like, stay on rhythm and ride the beat. Like, that was the first thing. So, like, he loved working with, you know, female artists. He had worked with female artists before, and he wanted, you know, he wanted to do it more. So he was like, she got some potential there. And then he didn't, like, get hype. He didn't want to gas me. He was just like, why don't you record something else? So I recorded something else, and that wasn't bad. And then I started writing some stuff to, like, directly to for the tracks, and that turned into my first EP.
Right.
And then this man taught me what a 16 was.
Oh, right.
I didn't even know what a 16 was.
Damn, okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. And even early on in my writing, I didn't know how to write hooks. Like, if you listen to my older stuff, a lot of times there's scratches on the hook part because I didn't know how to write them. So in that, I was like a malleable ball of clay. And with all of his experience when working with other artists and their different sounds and styles and stuff, he knew how to accentuate my strengths and what music, like, I was able to flow better on. And then, like, he would even, like, do things to kind of punctuate, like, my voice and, like, if I had, like, different flows and stuff. So there was this very synergistic relationship forming as I learned how to rhyme. And then he was, like, just creating music that best supported my voice and my flow. So I think that you can see it now. Like, it's so, like, cohesive. Like, our sound in you know, our sound together is a thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's years
yeah.
in the making. You can see that, obviously, especially when you listen back. But just hearing this, it's such a complete kind of project. It feels like there's a lot of thought that's gone into it. And mm-hmm. on that front, actually, I was going to ask you about your artwork, because it's just a really nice photo, sticks out. What was the thinking behind that image being the one for this album? What was it? Was there any other things that you were going with for the artwork?
Yeah, there were. That was the first idea. And I actually, you know, I loved the photo shoot. We went out to this really old farm out in Atlanta, out in Georgia, actually, with like the mule was like 25 years old, 25 year old donkey or mule or something that was out there, and horses. Yeah. And
wow.
There was this expanse of land that I felt really captured, like, the expanse of ourself and, like, how much we have within us, you know, if we only, like, tap into that. And that field shot was just so dope to me, because at that time, the sun was starting to set, like, and it was just a very, like, kind of moody vibe. And me looking up like that was just kind of searching for something more, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a perfect capture of Kaylin, you know, Gilstrap. She was the photographer for that. So we kept coming back to those images, because I think that, you know, I wanted to kind of reinterpret this experience that my family had on this farm, where they were being, you know, swindled out of, you know, their labor and all of this stuff, into a place where it was more empowering. You know, my presence on the farm was empowering in this picture. And that's what we were going for. And I think we captured it.
Man, that the word empowering is really important there, especially in 2020 has gone, 2021 hasn't started. It started quite crazy as well. Listen to something like Revolution on your track, and the times we're living in are wild. They're crazy. There's so much going on. And I was just wondering if we just don't think about the virus or other stuff that's going on, for yourself, do you feel in America, especially with this a little bit of a change happening, obviously there's a new president in charge when we're talking, for you, are you quite hopeful that there's going to be a change in light of your track like Revolution?
I'm always hopeful, because I know what our potential is, especially as Black people. When we think about what we have endured and what we have created out of some of the harshest and, you know, horrific experiences that this world has doled out to humanity, and what we've created out of that, you know, what we have lent to, you know, the humanity's legacy. It's a really beautiful thing. And then we think about humanity as a whole, like, just our potential. That allows me to continue to be hopeful. I don't put a lot of faith into politicians or, you know, what we call the justice system in America, but I put a lot of faith in the people. I think that a lot of people are now understanding how powerful their voice and their presence is in this world, and they're starting to use it. And social media can be a blessing and a curse, but it allows us to share information. It allows us to share ideas. And for people who felt kind of impotent before about what they can do and how they can speak up and how they can inform their circles, you know, to take an active role in kind of shifting perceptions and, you know, enlightening folks. So, yeah, I have all hope in people. That's in humanity. Good,
man. I feel that. I love that energy. I love that energy. It's a very tough question to kind of even answer, I suppose. So completely pass this if you want to. But is there anything in the last, like, I mean, it's been so turbulent for the last 10 years, I would have said. But like, is there anything you'd learned in the last 10 to 5 years where you've thought, look, we've learned this lesson. Let's grab this. Let's learn from it. And let's move on. Is there anything that sticks out to you in the last few years as a people, as a culture, people who are trying to, like, you know, heal a little bit?
I've learned so many things. It's hard to isolate.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
Every day we find the lessons and the beauty in everything that we encounter. But, you know, honestly, I would say I have had a renewed sense of faith in music, in hip hop in particular, to influence and motivate people to, or galvanize people into action. You know, seeing when a lot of things were taking place in the world and in America in particular, and seeing hip hop artists create music that spoke directly to that, and seeing their supporters rejoice in the fact that their favorite artist was articulating something that they felt that they couldn't. And, you know, I knew that, but in these particularly tumultuous times, to see like a lot of the music that was coming out, even with, you know, Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, like the stuff that he was talking about on that. Just so much like Anderson .Paak's, like his song, I can't think of the name, but the song
Lockdown, that came out
after the lockdown. Exactly.
Lockdown, yeah.
Like all these songs, all of these tracks that musically allowed for the voices of people and listeners and supporters to be amplified. In ways that we, because I'm a listener as well, never thought possible. So I think that was a big thing that I relearned, I should say.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, again, I suppose you are relearning that, because when I grew up in the 90s, UK, obviously very different, but a lot of the political stuff re-landed over here. It's not just for me, but like Public Enemy and people like that, KRS-One, when they were dropping things that really, I don't know what's happening in the Bronx. I don't really know what's happening in Queens. Yet when I hear Illmatic, I'm passported straight there and I feel like, oh, wow, these people are living in just a different complete world to me. So I feel that now. I do. I feel like yourself. There's people like Conway who's dropping like him. Even when someone like Conway drops those kind of bars about like the way of the world, it's not just the usual Griselda everyone's used to. And I think that's another thing echoing what you've just said. Hip hop is replying to this in its own way. And yeah, it's pretty fascinating, man.
Yes, yes, we're rocking with the best. This is the one and only Just Blaze. Right now, you're checking out the Crate 808 podcast. Remember to hit up crate808.com, like, comment, subscribe, and all of that. Peace.
I'm just going to jump back into ATLians because I know we're supposed to talk about it, but I really, really want you to dive into your career as well. But just diving back into ATLians, right? I wanted to know if you're looking at that album now, and maybe you'll say, I don't want to do it. But if you could, if you had the chance to jump on a track, like just lace it with either a hook or some bars on ATLians, which one would you go for?
Definitely 13th Floor. Like that's like so up my alley.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like reflective, pensive, like he's talking about social issues. And just the concept of the song, you know, talking about how when one thing ends, it can transform into something else.
Yes.
Like that's my bag. Like talking about that transformation, that metamorphosis that we, I have an album called Metamorphosis. So I always like mess up that word now.
I love it.
The metamorphosis that we are constantly, you know, going through, you know, everything that dies is renewed and reborn. That's such a powerful message, and like something I'm always kind of reflecting on one way or another through like music and stuff. So I just felt like that would be perfect for me to, and then I could do like a little remix on the hook.
I love it. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I love that. I had one, just because I want to see two dope boys and a goddess in a Cadillac. That's such a lie. I'm ready to hear that remix. But I was thinking, you're, you know, E.T. like the way when you hear extraterrestrial,
that to me is Saw Rock,
man. And I was like, even when that track stopped, you know, musically, I'm not sure if it's just me, but when I hear it, it feels like almost like a prog rock or like a synth rock group has started. Like there's this, it doesn't feel like hip hop. It feels different. And then you start getting into it and you feel like, oh, I get it. This is still hip hop, but it's just took that and that and that and made it hip hop. And, there are actually a few bars on there. I wanted to just echo with you and see if there's anything that, you know, that still sticks with you, like bars wise, because in lockdown, it feels like you haven't seen any of your loved ones for so long. It can feel like all you have left are memories, right? And I remember hearing this album the other day and Andre was on there like, what did he say? Something like holding on to memories like roller coaster handlebars. And that's just a little line where I was like, oh my God, that's exactly how I feel right now. Like it feels like that's all I've got and I'm just holding on to them because all this craziness is happening. And yeah, so I was wondering if there was anything that stuck out to you, just like lyrics wise, where you feel like, yeah, you know, really resonates with you. Or
on the album? Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? What really stands out to me, especially now as an MC, where he's talking about this old sucker MC stepped up to me, challenged Andre to a battle, and I stood there patiently as he spits doubled on the cliche so-called freestyling. Because
wow,
like that line, that happens to me all the time.
Oh no way! Does it really? Oh no!
Not in a challenging way. Mm-mm. But people will come up to me in like extremely loud clubs and at the merch tables and like just rap like nonstop to me. And I think of, did you ever watch that show Atlanta? Donald Glover.
Yeah, love. Oh my God, is it like that?
Remember
scene?
That scene and then the club where he was rapping?
Oh my God,
this is.
God,
my life.
This is
and, you know, I feel privileged that people feel like.
Yeah,
you know, they want to share their gift with me or whatever.
Absolutely,
but it's just funny. It's just funny to me because the environment, like the environments that we're in, are not necessarily the most appropriate of environments to do that.
Yeah.
But it's such an interesting thing. Like hip hop is just such a beautiful little world. That
a
beautiful vast world, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like that whole verse is hilarious to me.
That's so funny, man. That's so funny.
And then I love that came into this world high as a bird from secondhand cocaine powder.
Oh,
I know it sounds absurd. Yeah, never tooted, but it's in my veins. Yeah.
Oh man, who else starts like that? Like, right, you are transported in two bars to a whole childhood. It's crazy. But yeah, that's crazy. You just talked there about Atlanta, and I was actually listening to ATLians the other day, and it made me think of the episode Woods. You know where he's in the woods and he's having a
When he got
robbed
or something like
that. Yeah, he got robbed. He's in the woods. There's that guy who's sitting there, but he's not really there. Then he goes and he takes a selfie with the guy. That I feel for independent hip hop artists like yourself, like other people out there who are working artists, and this man does not want to give selfies. He doesn't want to do any of that. Yet he goes through the woods and at the end, he's with a guy and he does a selfie, paperboy. And that, man, I don't know. I'm not even an independent artist, but just seeing that makes me feel like it's hard on the grind for some of these people.
And to find that footing too, because I think that the whole thing with that is he was getting bigger, but he felt like he was losing his, I don't know, like his, I don't want to say street cred, like that's cliche, he was losing his sense of place in the world that he grew up in like his area, and he couldn't just be normal.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, like as we're talking about Outkast and talking about Dre, how, I don't know if you read that GQ article where he talked about, he explored some of his issues with anxiety, you know, with the whole celebrity persona. And we are lucky enough when he lived in Atlanta to see Dre pull up at the store, shop for himself, pull up at the vegetarian restaurant, order some food.
Damn.
Because he was very like adamant about maintaining this sense of normalcy, you know, of him as wildly popular as he was, you know, he refused to be in this bubble. You know what I mean? To allow himself to be removed in this bubble from like people and, you know, just day-to-day normal experiences. And I think that Paperboy was kind of fighting against that fighting against being drawn into this world of like artifice and like this idea that you are somehow better than or removed from the people around you, you know. So yeah, that's this.
I love the way you've linked that all up, man. I'm better than me. That's brilliant. The way you've linked it all up, like Atlanta, Outkast, yeah, it's all there. Absolutely. And just Andre, and I know Big Boy is amazing, you know, especially on Wailing. Wailing is a track. Another earworm where the hook on that, the guy humming, that melody, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Come on, you know. And that again is like, oh right, so you can just naturally just throw that in there and that now works. Big Boy in that is amazing. But there was one bit talking about Dre, and I feel like it's very, very easy to sleep on the fact that as a youngster coming up in them that age, setting the scene and making that space for yourself, you could quite easily say to everyone else, we're better than all of you. We don't need any of you guys because we're doing this now. And they weren't to know in 20 years, Atlanta's going to be the center of hip hop. But like what he says on them bars, which I still hits home today, because at the time I thought they were pretty ahead of their time when I was a kid, because I was to Pac, to Biggie. There's a lot of like, you know, to-ing and fro-ing about who's better. And man, when he says flows that ain't hip hop, but from a gift shop, but each to his own. And then he goes off about how we all need each other. That's some real grown man talk that I didn't expect from someone like Dre. AT Aliens has all of that. And you're like, this is your second album, man. How are you doing this? And yeah, and just fascinating. I just love that track, man. Love it.
Yeah.
So yes, man. I mean, we could go on and on, but like AT Aliens, I love the fact you've brought this for us. Is there any other track on AT Aliens before I shut it off? Was there anything else you wanted to say? We haven't talked about Elevators, which is a bit mad, because I would love to know what if I said to you Elevators, what's the first thing you would think of if I said to you the track Elevators? If you hear that, what's the first memory that comes to mind?
When I first started, it's funny, it's a more recent memory.
Okay.
When I first started rhyming, I was like, I'm gonna do my take on elevator music. Like, it's gonna be called Elevator Music, and it's like talking about elevation, like evolving, you know, beyond the limitations of like this human body and, you know, our experiences. And I was influenced by that song and that the titling of that, you know, of that track. So much of my life is credited to Outkast.
So before God Hop, yeah, it was elevator music.
Yeah, before God Hop, like that, it was short lived because it just really didn't.
Yeah. But I like it. Bring it back.
but that was directly, that's the first thing I think of, because I thought of them. Like I was like, oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah.
Elevator music, because they was just on one with that album. And like even with the artwork for it.
Yeah.
You know, everything was just so far ahead of what everybody was doing. I even bought one of those little granny little turbans that Dre used to wear. I never was bold enough to wear it, even though like it, you know, it technically is a woman's hat, technically, yeah. You know, yeah. But yeah. You know.
Wow.
He rocked that joint and we loved it.
That is amazing. Have you ever seen him out and about playing his flute? Have you ever seen him just?
I haven't, because I don't think I'm not sure, but I don't think he's in Atlanta.
Oh, he's
right
not
now.
In ATL now. Oh, okay, then. Right. Okay, yeah, because you hear these stories. He's a bit like the kind of mystical like pixie, if you know what I mean.
Like just like popping up and
yeah. It just makes me feel
the
good.
Gas station, the airport, right?
Yeah. Anybody want any flute music? Don't worry, I got you. It's I love that. It's great, and it just makes me think of that. But this again, this is how Outkast became so ahead of their time. To me, they're very David Bowie. Like I listen to a lot of other music, but it feels like the space thing is there. I'm going to take a genre like he took rock and just made it something different. They kind of did that with hip hop. Like they took the genre from the East. And I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know much about South music, and Outkast were the first, them and Goody Mob were the first people I listened to South.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I thought it was West Coast. I was like, this sounds just like West Coast. And my ear wasn't there. My ear wasn't there as a kid. And eventually you start hearing more and more. And then you start realizing, no, this isn't West Coast. This is something different. But it had that, I was in the same rhythm, if you know what I mean, as a West Coast track rather than an East Coast track. But they took it all. And I love that about it. I love that, man.
But that makes sense that you thought that, because both West Coast rap and Atlanta rap, they're heavily influenced by funk.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
So like that you could identify that was cool too.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know? Yeah, good shout. Yeah, good shout actually. Yeah. But yeah, Soul Rock Band, thank you for your time. I appreciate the time you've given us. I could sit here for hours just going through all your mixtapes because I've been listening to them over and over. But yeah, thank you for delivering that album for us, Sharecropper's Daughter as well. I mean, is there anything else we should be looking out for from yourself now going ahead? I know there's a new Black mixtape you've got coming out, you've dropped on your socials sometime.
That is actually some older music that never really got... You know, I never really got to promote it like that. So I'm reintroducing it because I thought it was dope. And I was like, no one heard this. I need for y'all to hear this now.
Okay.
So The Legend of Black Moses. Yeah, that's out. And then Soul Messiah is coming out with a project, a really dope project called God Complex, which, you know, I'm featured on pretty heavily and some other, I don't know if he wants me to say who's on there, but some dope lyricists, MCs, artists are going to be on there as well. And something else coming, but I can't announce it yet, but it's coming very, very soon.
Okay. Wow. So 2021, still killing it, man. Love it. And before you leave us then, I'm just going to ask you what I ask everyone when they come on the pod and leave us. What's the last great piece of music you heard? So it could be old, could be new, can't be AT Aliens as we've talked about it, but is there something else that you've played recently where you've been like, that is great?
Dang.
Feel free to check your phone if you want to. People do jump into their Spotify's.
Oh, okay. That's not cheating.
No, it's not. It's fine. I'm just here to learn new music. And
I'm trying to think. I'm listening to so much music. It's hard.
It's all good. That's good. That's a good thing, right? So
you know what? You know, I will say that I recently revisited this album by Tame Impala. Does it have to be hip hop?
No, it doesn't have to be. Just the last great thing. Tame Impala works.
Yeah. Tame Impala, I recently revisited that album. And to me, like from start to finish, the album is just amazing. Yes. And it's called, what is that album called?
Oh, the new one with the orangey cover, the red cover from last year, right? And is that
it's one? Not even the new one.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
It's the one with the song that Rihanna redid. It's called Currents. It's from Currents. 2015.
That artwork's trippy. Now, that artwork is quite trippy, yeah.
I love that album. And you know what's crazy? I first heard them in London. I was in a vegetarian restaurant getting some food, and I was like, that's that Rihanna song. And then it wasn't. It was their song.
Yeah.
And they were playing the whole album in this restaurant, and I was like, we have to get this album.
Damn.
So, yeah.
You brought up UK there for a second there. We can't leave without hearing your thoughts on London and you know what you miss and UK generally. Like when are you back as well? I mean, you can't tell, right? With COVID, you don't really know, right? So
yeah, I had a European tour that was scheduled and we were booking some UK dates for that. But now everything's just kind of up in the air. So I'm hoping that towards the end of this year we can get back out there. But London is just so amazing.
You like it? Yeah.
You know, when I was younger, I used to like do a fake British accent. It sounded so posh.
Oh, no. Now I need to hear this.
No, I will not be ridiculed on your podcast.
Yeah, just do a little promo for us, just in English. It'll be like, who is this? Oh, it's Sorok. She's English. Brilliant.
Sorok. MC from Washington, D.C. Now
That's really good. Right. We had Stretch and Bobito on here, right? Legends. And they were ripping me for my English accent, how I say Bobito. And fair play, I don't say it right. It should be Bibito or whatever. I don't know. I'm English. I didn't say it. So you've nailed it. That's perfect. You can do it better than me. It's brilliant. good work, man. Good work. Well, man, what a way to end it. So where can we catch you? What's the website? And the socials? Where can we get hold of your stuff?
Website is sarok.com. It's sarok.com. But if you type in sarok.com, it'll pop up. I'm on social media, Instagram and Twitter at Sarok the MC.
Wicked.
SarokTheMC. And then on Facebook, I have an artist page. It's Sarok, spelled like my name, SaROC. Yeah. I'm on everything, honestly. I'm on Clubhouse. I'm on TikTok. I'm on thriller, whatever it's called. Everything.
Love it. I'm going to catch you on Clubhouse, man. Let's go in. I love that.
Yes.
Wicked, man. Wicked. Well, man, thank you again. Good luck with everything you got going on this year. We're looking forward to it. And hopefully we can get you back on again at some point and talk new music whenever it drops, man, for sure.
Absolutely. I love that. This is like the best interview I've had since I dropped the album.
Oh, thank you. Wow. That feels good, man. That feels good. Yeah. That feels good. Oh, man, thank you. Well, yeah, you've been an amazing guest. So thank you again for coming on. One of our best. So there you go.
Thank you.
But yes, we'll catch you on the flip side. And peace, man. Peace.
Thank y'all.